copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
What I'm going to do today is just start off with a very quick recap of some of the sort of outline of that, which hopefully won't, it will be rather speedy, but I apologize for that. So we're into the third part of it, exploring the causes and cures. And we started by talking about the fact that depression is a word that we use that covers a whole range of experience, from just feeling blue, feeling a bit low and down, mild discouragement, sadness, and so on, through to much more serious, severe depression, what we would call in the medical world clinical or major depression. And we know that this is a serious problem throughout the world, and particularly when we look at the figures of suicide. This is comparing 1999 in the dark blue to 2014 in the light blue, and across the age range. So the highest incident of suicide is in the elderly, because they have so many losses, dealing with so many medical illnesses, maybe the questions of what have they done with their lives. There's also a little bit of a peak in the middle years, and that's particularly true for women, when I think people are questioning, what have I done with my life, how has my family turned out, and so on. But severe depression is a real problem throughout the world, and some countries have a much higher suicide rate. You can see the dark colors representing the places where there is the highest suicide rate, which is intriguing living here in Eastern Europe. So when we're talking about depression, what I'm going to describe, it's important for people who are pastors, who are counselors, to be able to discriminate, but just the ordinary depression of life, which all of us experience at times, and what we call serious depression or clinical depression. And this is where someone is depressed or loses interest and pleasure in life for at least 2 weeks, plus at least five of the following symptoms. They may lose their appetite, they may find it very difficult to sleep all through the night, typically waking at 2 or 3 in the morning. They may feel very little energy, a lot of fatigue. They may become very agitated and restless and anxious. And they also may have inappropriate guilt or feelings of worthlessness. So they may not have done anything wrong, but they may be profoundly convicted that they have. Often decisions are difficult, they can't concentrate very well, and they may have suicidal ideas. So, and this, in what we call psychotic depression, really serious depression, some people may have delusions, believing that they have cancer when they don't, that they're being followed by the KGB or the CIA. And Christians, of course, find that prayer just seems useless, and the Bible seems pretty meaningless, and God far away. So we live in this fallen world, we live on this polarity of moods, and most of us live somewhere in the middle between the extremes of what we call mania and severe depression. That depression over there on the left should actually be over here. I apologize, it's on the wrong side. But mania being part of what we call bipolar or manic depression. So it's where someone is happy all the time, energetic, often sleepless, often exhausting themselves in the process. The other end, severe depression of the hopelessness and disillusionment and despair. Now, so most of us live in this middle ground in between the two, because we live in a broken world. We're all subject to difficulties and suffering. And we looked last time at the differences between men and women in the way they express depression, in the way they look for help. We looked at the biblical experience in the psalmists, especially David's experience of depression in Job. We looked at the men of God like Elijah and Moses and Jonah who said, Lord, I've had enough, take my life. They all got, for very different reasons, to this common end point of wanting to die. We saw that this is a common experience both in biblical times, in the present, but also throughout history. And there are some profound writings about depression from the Puritan writers that we looked at one or two of those last time. Then we looked at the causes, how everyone, all of us, are vulnerable to depression. Living in, where we talk about the world, the flesh, and the devil, we're all vulnerable to the effects of living in a fallen world where bad things happen to us. People sin against us, not through any cause of our own. We get cancer. We're involved in a fire where your house burns down, maybe. And then the flesh, where our sinful nature, our pride, our selfishness, and so on, can make us more vulnerable to depression. And then our body and our brain, which may have perhaps a genetic predisposition to bipolar disorder or severe depression. So you often see it running in families. And then the devil are always there. We're all involved all the time in spiritual warfare against the evil one. Now, in the secular world, people would talk about the causes in terms of the psychological causes, the social causes, and the biological causes. And we looked at, in a bit more detail, at the first two, and we got to the biological. And we find nowadays, when we can look at the brain with various forms of brain scanning, you can see the difference here. This is in severe clinical depression, that the brain is functioning very differently when someone is severely depressed. And we saw how there is high activity in the emotion-related parts of the brain, especially the amygdala, the deep limbic system, where people are more, and this is correlated with people being more emotionally sensitive, especially to difficult things happening in their lives. So they may react with more extreme reactions. And then the decreased activity in the areas that relate to thinking. So people have a harder time making decisions and harder time concentrating. And then an increased activity related to guilt, and in the areas related to guilt and rumination. So, and we were thinking about some of the chemistry in the brain. You know, the neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine and noradrenaline carry the impulses from one neuron to another in the network of millions of neurons we have. And in depression, it seems that these neurotransmitters, these little red globules here, are decreased in amount. So antidepressants, antidepressants will increase the amount of neurotransmitter in that gap. So hopefully countering the depressive tendencies in the brain. Antidepressants also work by encouraging the growth of new nerve cells and the activity and the connections of the nerve cells. And we know from work in animal studies, especially with rats, that when they exercise a lot, this increases the activity of the nerve cells. And we find, I believe that the best self-help for depression is actually exercise, because it stimulates the nerve cells. So many, many people today, and partly because the pharmaceutical industry funds so much research in depression and they want you to buy their pills, many people, the first thing they do when they get depressed is to go to antidepressants, certainly in America and Western Europe. What we have found in the research is that antidepressants are most useful in severe depression. There's questionable evidence of how useful they are in terms of their value over placebo. When they're compared with a placebo, in moderate and mild depression. And I think that varies a lot with individuals. Some people are very sensitive to antidepressants and may be helped out of depression even with moderate and mild depression. But I usually work on the principle that unless it's pretty severe, we will not encourage people to use antidepressants. But when it is severe, it can be life-saving for them to use them. And it's best if you combine them with counseling and psychotherapy, not just one or the other. So there's a higher relapse rate if they're used alone. And people get side effects, so you have to juggle the side effects against the dose. Some people are more sensitive with one drug than another. So it's not a very exact science. And people have to be on an antidepressant for anywhere from 6 to 18 months, and sometimes in bipolar disorder, where they use different medication, they need to be on it for life to prevent the cycles going up and down so extremely and to prevent them being so often. And then there are other things like St. John's wort and something called SAM-E, and these can help with mild to moderate depression. In America, they have been not recommended by the American Psychiatric Association because they tend to interact with other medications that people may be on. I think that fish oil is good for whatever ails you. Whether it's your heart, your brain, and there is some evidence that it helps people to be more resistant, less vulnerable to depression. There are other medications that you'll find people are on, often several of these at once. Mood stabilizers, these are the names we use in the United States. Anticonvulsants, atypical neuroleptics, but people tend to get on a lot of medications nowadays when they're struggling with, especially with other forms of mental illness as well. So it's very confusing for them and for people who are trying to help them in counseling. But out of this, I would say medication is helpful for severe depression. And in when that doesn't work, then electroconvulsive therapy is helpful in helping people to break out of severe depression. It sounds very barbaric, but it is actually a very helpful treatment. I can tell you more if you want to know in discussion. And then there are other research therapies that are being experimented with here that you can see on the slide that also seem to have an effect in helping people out of really severe depression that isn't helped in any other way. So the other biological factors that we need to think of, some people are vulnerable, some women are vulnerable, and women in general are vulnerable when there are times in their life when hormones are changing. So teenage girls going through puberty are more vulnerable. At childbirth, at menopause, and so postpartum depression can be very serious, or it can be just people going through a little bit of the blues. They feel a little depressed, but it's not serious. But that can be something that seems to have quite a strong biological basis to it. Some people, especially in sort of Arctic and northern Scandinavia regions, where we see this the most, experience seasonal affective disorder, so that in the long winter months they find themselves particularly depressed. I know I'm pretty sensitive to light, and I find that I tend to get more depressed in the winter times, and there are lots of reasons why that might be, but light, particular forms of light therapy seem to help these people. And then we need to be aware too that some physical illnesses will present to the doctor as depression. So someone with a thyroid disorder, where their thyroid is not functioning well, may get depressed or may get anxious. Someone who's had a stroke, somewhere around 50% of people who have strokes will get quite seriously depressed afterwards, or some sort of traumatic brain injury. Alzheimer's disease, people get depressed with that. B12, vitamin B12 deficiency, and medications for, as you can see, for things like blood pressure, cancer, medications like hormones, steroids, they too can contribute to depression. Now, there are some recent theories on all of this that when we look at a certain proportion of the population who don't seem to respond to antidepressants at all, and there are theories now that about brain inflammation causing people to be more vulnerable to depression. And inflammation in the body is being blamed nowadays for quite a lot of things. And you'll hear about anti-inflammatory diets. Mm-hmm. And basically, that is a good, healthy diet, a sort of Mediterranean diet, rather than a junk food diet. So anything that we can do to reduce the inflammation in our bodies and brains will make us healthier, to put it crudely. So healthy diet is really important. And then there's another theory which suggests that what we call the flora and the fauna, the bacteria in your gut, may also contribute to people's mood states, may affect anxiety, depression. So there's a whole new generation of what are called psychobiotics beginning to appear. Now, it's all rather speculative research, but watch this space, because there may be more on that we're beginning to discover about how our minds are affected by our biology. So let me summarize in terms of the causes before, and then the second half we'll go on to how can we help with depression. We've obviously talked a little bit about antidepressants, but so when you think about all of us being vulnerable to depression in this way, there are a lot of reasons for that. Some people will be temperamentally sensitive and pessimistic. I talked yesterday about the Eeyores of this world, or the Tiggers, who are the manic, exuberant, excitable people. So temperament has a part to play, and that's genetically inherited. And then if you've experienced a lot of past losses or even recent losses, so the childhood trauma down on the left there of losing a parent when you are young is statistically correlated with an increased risk of depression. It doesn't mean you will inevitably, but if you've lived through abuse and neglect and parents divorcing, obviously that's a deeply sad thing, and it may make you more vulnerable. And other sorts of trauma, of abusive trauma or rape, or being a veteran. Veterans in the United States are committing suicide at the rate of 20 a day. These guys coming back from war, 20 a day. They have been deeply traumatized and are more vulnerable to depression. That many of them have experienced traumatic brain injury from roadside bombs and things like that, and that makes them vulnerable too. And then our biology, our genes, our hormones. Some people genetically are more prone to bipolar disorder. There's quite a strong genetic factor in that. So I always ask people about their family history of depression. And then lack of marriage and family support, other stresses, and demonic influence, as we mentioned earlier on. Wherever you are vulnerable in terms of self-pity or pride or the desire to be in control of life, the devil will come in and he will exacerbate that. And he will exacerbate the areas where in our sinful nature, our weakness, because of the fall, that he will also, his fiery darts, he will get in and exacerbate that too. So when we're talking, as we will come on to in a minute, and talking about how to help people with depression, then we may address any of these areas. And we're seeing how, what a complex phenomenon it is, and how important it is to listen to people's stories well, to take the time to hear, rather than quickly move in and give them a mini sermon and try to fix them. You want to know what of these things is going to be, is important, that has contributed to their state of mind.